you want it over there?
No, I've got one on each end, okay. So that way we can hear everything.
You look like you have lots of space there.
Yeah, I'm taking up the whole table.
Now, how would you call wires? Cords.
Masin Irakukwe.
Irakuk is a rope.
Yeah.
Or Irakukwa.
There is a word.
Irakukwa.
Irakukwa.
Something like a rope.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we might have a few more people trickle in, but there's a lot of people out of town this weekend, so we're just going to do what we can.
Mm-hmm.
Just as background for what we're doing, some of you might remember back in April, some of us went to this workshop in Montana it was called this Giving the Gift of Language workshop. It was actually designed for fluent speakers who are teachers, but most of us who went weren't fluent. We're just learning the method, you know, for the future, and Florence went with us. So the notes that I took here kind of give you a background, although it's, you know, just notes that I was taking during the presentation. It kind of shows what the guy is thinking. The main idea behind this method is that for people to learn the language, they have to learn the way babies learn when they're learning to speak their language. And, you know, when you have a baby, you don't just say, okay, look at this word list, okay, memorize it. And if a baby makes a mistake, you don't say, what's wrong with you? How come you don't know? You just, you know, say, oh, good, you try, you know, and then you kind of say it again, but you say it the right way, that kind of thing. So I'm going to go ahead and read through some of this because I haven't actually read my own notes in a while. Yeah, one thing he did mention was that, you know, the Maoris and the Hawaiians, they're having a lot of success, but they've got a lot more native people than we do. They've got a lot more money and a lot more government support. They can have their students in their immersion schools for 8 hours a day, and that's not something that we really have, so we need to find a method that will have greater success. And so he says that language is learned through cognition or understanding. Babies know, understand what people are saying before they're actually able to talk, and that's kind of similar what we've noticed with the apprentices. You know, we can understand a lot more than we can say, so we're kind of like babies in the language. Let's see. He says that we should be able to take advantage of our current understanding of one language in order to learn another. I'm not really sure, since English and Alutiiq are so different, I don't think he's saying that we should copy the structure of English when we're learning Alutiiq, but I think just our ability to learn any language should show that we have the ability to learn a different language.
Are we on the same page as you?
We're looking at this notes page. I'm about a third of the way down.
Okay.
And we're looking at the second packet in there. It's right behind. What we're doing is we're just kind of going over the methodology of this guy's method before we start. He says that his process is pretty fast. It's a step-by-step process. Each step builds upon the last step, so that, you know, you're not jumping around from one subject to another. You're using what you learned in the first one to help you learn the second one. If people don't buy into it, it'll slow their progress. I think that's both for the teacher as well as the students. And basically, his curriculum is like a language map. You know, we can modify it for our own needs. And I noticed that a lot with the other native groups that were there that were already using his method. They say they used it more like an outline, and then they, you know, made modifications for their own language because all the native languages are so different. He talked a lot about different methods. He has a really low opinion of computer programs like the Rosetta Stone, which I thought was interesting. And I think he did have a good point where, you know, a computer program can't replace a fluent speaker as far as teaching someone the language. A computer program can't you know, figure out why you're not understanding something and change their methods in order to teach you better. A computer program can't give you a hug at the end of the day and tell, you know, tell the student how good they did, that kind of thing. Of course, that is something that we're looking at. You know, we might need to use computer programs in addition to fluent speakers because we have so few and we're not able to provide, you know, teachers to everyone that wants to learn the language at this point. Books, he was talking about some examples down there where they translated like Bambi into, or I think that was a movie actually, like producing books. It doesn't produce enough money to save a language. Like people think, oh, we'll make a language book and the money from that book will help fund our immersion preschool. And he was saying, well, those are all well and good, but it doesn't make enough money to really save your language. This method tries to avoid writing and grammar as much as possible, because he says as soon as somebody starts trying to write something down, people rely on the paper to remember for them and not their own mind. And that's something that's going to be probably the hardest to get people away from, because we all like to write stuff down. And the scientific approach is different than how we learn. When you're doing grammar, that relies on memorization instead of understanding. A lot of this stuff is just thoughts that I had as well. Like, there's a lot of people that think that our children, if they learn a second language or if they know their native language, that they're somehow less intelligent, when actually it's been proven that it's the opposite. If you know a second language, you have better mental abilities than someone that only knows one language. In general, you have better problem-solving abilities, better at math, better at learning a third language, and also certain better social skills as far as other cultures, being more understanding of other cultures and that kind of thing. Then he talks about the ASLA method, which is the accelerated second language approach. He thinks, I'm not sure where he gets a lot of his information, and this is Dr. Gray Morning, by the way.
Good morning.
Stephen Gray Morning is the man who developed this method, and he did seem to have a lot of good information, but we all kind of noticed that he was a little bit full of himself. So he's like, I thought of this, I thought of that. He didn't even mention who he learned the language from really at all, which I think is, you know, something that's very important. But anyway, so when children learn the language, they learn 16 to 20 nouns at first, and then at about 20 months, they can start using two-word phrases, and then they move on to short sentences, and then all of a sudden, they just start talking really quickly. And so if you're trying to teach them by doing word lists and memorizing lots of stuff, that's not following the natural pattern. He said association pairs can contribute to language learning. Like if you teach a man, you should also teach him woman. If you teach him boy, you should also teach him girl, because if they remember girl, it'll help them remember boy. They'll kind of help them remember each other. When you're teaching, you shouldn't allow a student to just say ah or just, you know, nod their head. You have to expect the student to reply in full responses. I mean, sometimes ah is good enough, but if you only allow them to just say yes or no or just a one-word answer, it prevents them from having the responsibility to move on. So if you were to ask the student, for example, in Aleutic, who is in the kayak, if the student said man, well, that might be good like the first week you're teaching them, but after a while you need to say there is a man in the kayak, or there is an old man in the kayak, or there is a man in the kayak holding a paddle, or you know, something like that. So if you expect them, I guess the more you expect of them, the higher they'll reach. Teachers should learn how to ask a lot of questions, and that's really easy for those of you who are fluent speakers, but for people like me and Peggy, you know, we need to get more comfortable if we're in the classroom having a whole list of questions that we already know we can start asking them, so that we're staying in the language instead of us asking them in English and then having them respond in Aleutic. He says that developing complex sentences, combining numbers, colors, and subjects should occur after 14 total hours of instruction. How many hours would you say we've had of instruction so far, Peggy? Hundreds?
Yes.
And he says an example of a long sentence would be, I see two howling dogs chasing a white rabbit. and he actually, this whole later paragraph here that's all in the Lutic, he said this whole story in English, and he was telling some of the fluent speakers to translate the whole story into their language. And so I was kind of trying to see if I could do it, and it's not very grammatical, but should I read it to you guys? It's kind of funny. Staman nukashpiat tamleskat kunigun ahut sapudat akulitni. There were four men riding black horses going between a fence or something like that. Ashfeluk sapudak tamlechwachtuk, one of the fences was brown. Eipa sapudak katchtuk, the other fence is white. Katskak sapudami chungaskak sakushkanak akumok. Chungaskak. Oh, on one fence a blue bird is sitting. Tamlechwach skami akumok. Kumagyahuak, on the other fence, or on the black, on the brown fence, was sitting a hawk. I just called it a kumagyahuak. Although there might be a word for a hawk. Mm-hmm.
There is a, I can't remember, hawk. There's a word for it.
I should put that on my list of words I need to know.
Yeah.
Kumagyahuam tangha kuskanak, kumagyahuak keichtok. Pisuchchika kuskanak, kuskanam tangha kumariahwak chali, kuskanak nayoch kudach duk chuyuam achani. The rabbit is going to hide under a leaf. Nayoch kudach. Is it nuyak?
Yes.
Nuyak. Nayoch is to watch.
To watch.
Okay, yeah. Nuyak. I must have got the letters.
Were you trying to say hide?
Yeah, he's the rabbit is going to hide under a leaf or something. Nu yakudachto.
Hawk is in here.
What is it?
Ahuluk. Ahuluk.
Ahuluk. Ahuluk. Ahuluk. Ahuluk.
Hawk.
Yeah, I think that's what I can remember. I'm trying to think of my dad always.
Acholik.
Is that what it says there? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That makes sense, Nick? Mm-hmm. Okay, Acholik.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to hear.
Anyway, I guess what he was doing here was he was doing an exercise that he would have done with some of his advanced students where he would tell that whole story all together in English. He wouldn't tell it sentence by sentence and have the students say it. He would say it all in English and then say, you know, translate the whole story. Mm-hmm. And the idea was that when he's telling you the story in English, you're visualizing what happened. And so you don't have to memorize the story. You just kind of play it back in your mind. It's kind of like a visual way of learning when you, except that you have to make yourself see it. Mm-hmm. You're not trying to remember the words. Lessons can only be like 20 minutes long. Some were 40 or 50 minutes. He did a lot of documentation. Like he would write down every time he met with his students, he'd write down how many minutes he spent teaching, how many minutes he spent trying to figure out how much they knew. It was almost overboard how much documentation he did, but it was helpful to see how quickly they were learning. There was just a note here, this Robert Munch, he wrote a book called I Love You Forever, and he's given permission for all indigenous languages to translate his books. So that's something that we want to do actually here. And I haven't purchased one of his books yet. It's about a woman, and she has a baby boy, and then she says, I love you forever and ever, or something, and then he grows up to, you know, a bigger boy, and finally he's like this big man, and she's like still trying to hold him on her lap. It's pretty funny. But yeah, that's one that we should translate, because that's something, if he's given permission for us to translate it, then we could actually sell those translations as opposed to some of those other books that we've been doing. Under 426.06, the second thing I have written down here. It's not our job to find out or show what you don't know. It's the goal to show the student what they do know. And I think that's a major difference from traditional education, because usually it's like the teacher teaches and then they do a test and they show all the kids what they don't know. But that's kind of a negative way of teaching, as opposed to like when you bring the student up and you're showing them the pictures and stuff and pointing to stuff and having them identify what it is. If they don't know something, then it's the teacher's job to show them something else that they do know and help that bridge to what they don't know. Like, for example, if there was three pictures and they didn't know what the first one was, then you'd ask them what the second and third one were, and if they got those right, then you could ask them that first one again, and by process of elimination, they'd be able to identify it without you ever even correcting them. So it does take a little bit of strategy when you're teaching. One big quote he said is, when you live by memory, you die by memory, and he's kind of talking about languages. If we focus on memorizing our language, that's not how languages work, and that's not how languages are going to survive. And then it kind of goes into whole paragraphs here about stage one and stage two, which we'll probably get to when we're actually working on the stuff. So we can kind of move on. I don't want to spend too much time on this. He said, think of the students as babies. If you treat them as their true age and explain how to do things in English at their age level, then they'll just continue to think in English. So, for example, if I was teaching another adult and I was talking to them like an adult in Aleutic, then they're going to be trying to act like an adult, and it's going to keep them in that English mentality. If you bring them down to a baby level and start that way and work your way up, then according to this method, that's the best way to do it. When making mistakes, when a baby says, doggy, go bye-bye, the parents do not laugh or chastise them. They might say, yes, the dog is going away. So by doing that, you're correcting them, but not in a negative way. You're like agreeing with them, but also showing them the correct grammar without actually saying, I'm teaching you grammar. And teachers must find a way to positively expose them to the correct grammar and not just let them stay in baby talk. So that's why when a little kid says, doggy, go bye-bye, you have to say, yes, they're going away, you know, so it shows them without just agreeing with them and letting them keep talking like that. Do not explain grammar in English. This is the hardest thing for me. Yesterday at the language club, we did this whole big grammar lesson, which was actually kind of fun, but that's not this method. And I guess one thing I should mention is this method that we're doing with the ASLA method, creating this curriculum, this is just one of many different ways we can do it. And in the future, we might decide to combine them. You know, we might say, this is really good for the first year of learning. After that, it's good to do some little grammar talk and make sure that they really do understand or something like that. But when the student is first learning, we don't want to mix the methods too much. Right now, I think we're just going to try to focus on seeing how well this works, and then we can make changes to it later. His method uses a lot of pictures, and these are some of the pictures I printed out, because I was starting to try to practice the first stage of this method when I was over at the Digifognak camp. The first skill set is just 16 nouns. One of them is dog. Yeah, dog. You know, so you just have a picture of a dog. You know, it's just very simple type stuff. And, like, you go up to the front of the room, you point at it, you say dog, and then you have the kids repeat dog. I mean, it seems almost so simple that it's ridiculous that this guy is making all this money calling it a new method when really it seems very straightforward. But it does get a lot more complicated later. So you put all those 16 up. By the end of the first lesson, the kids know all of those words. And then you bring up a volunteer, and then you say, Pyuchta, Nama Pyuchta. And then you have the kid go point to the dog and say it. And then, you know, that's the first lesson. It's really pretty easy. It's when you start getting into the sentences and the multiple subjects and plural and all that kind of stuff that it gets more complicated.
Just like that, officer's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She learned right away.
Yeah. It is amazing sometimes, like, because I, you know, when I first wrote out this first skill set, you know, I had all these different lessons to teach just those 16 words, but by the end of that first lesson, they already know them. So sometimes you're like, wow, I need to kind of speed things up, because you don't want them to get bored. You don't want to keep teaching them over and over these 16 words. If they already know them, then it's time to move on. Does anyone have any concerns so far about this approach, like things that you think might be problematic for our language or anything like that? Okay. I'm trying to see if there's anything I haven't even touched on yet. A lot of these notes are a little bit repetitive because he did reinforce things a lot each day when we were... teachers need to know how to say it, repeat after me, say it louder, try it, kida, that kind of thing, so that even if we're not 100% fluent, that we could stay in the language while we're teaching instead of going back to English. When students both see and hear the language in their head, then they are really learning. Instruct the students to visualize when they hear the language. So, you know, if I were to say something in Aleutic, even if it was really simple, if I said piuhta, then the students are supposed to, like, visualize a dog, and that really helps them tie them together in their mind. And that's about it for those notes, I think. The biggest change for me when I started trying to teach with this method was to try to focus on what they knew, because sometimes you call a student up, they'd know everything, and that's really good. But it's really scary for the kids to get called up in front of all the other kids, and sometimes you can tell they're nervous. And so when they're really nervous, I try to ask them the easier stuff first, you know, because most of them know takukak already. You know, so I ask them to show me takukak, and they do that. And then I ask them to show me something else that I'm pretty sure they know, maybe nukashpiak or something like that. And then once you do a couple that they're comfortable with and they realize, oh, I know it, you know, then you can ask them, like, one or two harder ones and stuff like that. So basically that's where we are. We've started collecting some pictures, but we want to get a lot more culturally relevant ones, a lot of the ones, like, of some of the people. Like, I found this one for the woman is eating. You know, it's just any old person from the United States. So we're going to try to find more for this curriculum that will be more culturally relevant, so that students will identify with it more. And Sven, thankfully, is going to be helping with that, because he's got quite a big photo collection. I'm thanking him in advance. And we're going to try to get some other, even some historical.
Have photographs just from cardiac and mass, so.
Yeah, so I think it's possible. I mean, there's some, you know, like milk, you know, a glass of milk. I might just get that off the internet, because it's not worth our time to set up a whole photo shoot for that. But for seal and dog and bear and all that kind of stuff, it'd be nice to have some good.
I have a question. Okay, Nukashpiak and Anguduk. Since we have these three very fluent speakers, tell me what the difference is.
Nukashpiak is an older man. Nukashpiak is a man.
Nukashpiak. But then you use the piak, a real man. You know what? Because piak is real. Pchwak is sort of.
Nukashpiak. An older man.
Yeah.
No, the reason I asked that is because, remember Oscar, what is his name, really?
Quagley,
yeah. He mentioned that piak, and we all use that in our language, piak, because it's real.
It's real people, yeah.
Piak.
Yeah.
Nukashpiak.
We say
Nukashpiak.
Real man.
A real man. For me, it would be the reverse. The Nukashpiak. A real man. And Anguduk is just a man. A male.
Well, my theory is those words came from the Yupik region. Because in the Yupik region, an Angudak is a man.
A man, right.
Or something like that. And then a Nukash, I don't know what just...
Biak.
Yeah, Nukash Biak is real man, but I wonder what just man is. Nukash?
Angudak.
Nukash? Doesn't sound right.
Nukash.
But I think it's one of those words that have, you know, we took Nukash Biak into our language and then... And I think, yeah, eventually it just became the word for a man.
Little boy.
Even though over there, if we said Nukash Biak, it's a real man. For us, it's just a man. Maybe it's because all of our men are real men.
Ah, it could be. I don't know. Like Suk Biak.
Yeah.
Suk is a man, you know, person.
Is a person.
Suk.
Suk.
Or Biak. I just wanted to see.
But I was going to ask, I would ask, how do you explain Wilmer then?
Fisherman.
I will ask it.
Nukash Biakwak.
Nukash Biakwak. Nukash Biakwak.
But if you look at it, every village has one man like that.
Yeah, and they were in the older, if you read history, those kind of people were.
Smart too.
No, they were taken as real, you know, some really important person. Because they can be a man or a woman, and they know how a woman is and how a man is.
Yeah.
They were seen as really
person. Yeah, I heard that they used to be shamans or something sometimes.
Seemed like they're all smart. Yeah.
Well, we're not going to put that in our 16 basic nouns.
You might get some money out of it. Come on now.
But what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn on the projector. I have this document on my computer, so I'm going to project it on the wall so we can kind of go through it and everyone can see any of the changes we're making. And originally I was thinking we'd break into groups for some of the skill sets, but since we're in such a small, cozy group, it might work to just do it all together. I did bring my grammar book and my dictionary in case we ever come across. I couldn't figure out the projector at first. And what it did is it made like a two-screen thing where on there it just shows the background but nothing on it, no matter what I did here. But then I figured out that it was trying to do a side-by-side.
Yeah,
side.
So do you do it just mirror?
Yeah.
I'll get it.
They used to call them.
We used to have them. What they call them? I know those ones, those apricots.
Jutalachon. Those stone, you go into that. And it's that left and right.
Left potato.
There are stars.
Oh, we can hear
the stars.
Well, I noticed on my computer it's all wide looking too, wider than usual.
So yeah, it changes the screen because this is such a low quality one. So maybe we can use something funny.
Actually, I already mentioned it to Kate.
Yeah,
do better. But that was the day before she went into labor, so.
So maybe what I'll do is I can take the final one.
Yeah.
Then you didn't with Mark.
Yeah, it was Mark in the dungeon. The back end where he
can't
see.
Oh.
So this first skill set, which is the 16 basic nouns, it's already kind of complete, although it needs some fixing up. But we picked, those of us who went on that trip, we picked nouns that we thought that kids would be kind of interested in, as well as he kind of made us break them down into different categories. We had human terms, animals, modes of transportation, and objects. And we did make one change because originally he wanted four modes of transportation and four four of each one. But we changed it to three modes of transportation because in Kodiak there's, you know, we don't have trains, we don't have hovercrafts. and so we just thought it might make it a little bit easier to make the sentences in the later lessons if we had stuff that was more readily available. So we just made it car, boat, and airplane for the modes of transportation. The animals, we have bear, salmon, dog.
Kayak.
We could do kayak, but the problem with that, we actually had kayak, I think. Or we had ski walk, one or the other. And it just made it, what's that?
Boat, small open boat.
Durak.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
Other ideas to think about, sorry. Okay.
Ski walk is a working boat.
Yeah. Ski walk, a skiff. So then we took those, and then that's our list. And then I made another list on the top of the second page, teacher vocabulary needed for lessons. And I wanted to check some of these. So the first one, kida, go on or let's go. You try it, taguhu. And what's you all try it? Taguchu?
Taguchu.
How do you say all of you try it?
Are you commanding us or asking?
Yeah, commanding. Taguchu? Taguchu.
Okay. You have taguchi on this one.
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to fix that spelling.
Taguchu?
Taguchu.
Is that C-I-U or C-U?
C-I-U.
Taku
one person try it. Taku chu, you all try it. And then the next one, Niuahu, say it. Is that right?
You all say it?
For one person, telling one person to say it. Niuahu?
No.
What if you're telling them to say a specific word, like if I say takuka, and then I want nyushu, nyushu.
That's telling them.
Okay,
what was your question again?
Like if I was up at the front of the classroom and I was saying an Aleutic word, takukak, and then I want my volunteer to repeat after me, how would I tell them to?
Say espeteli.
Espeteli?
Okay.
You
too. Nyushu? No, nyushu is you tell them.
Yeah.
No, you, she's asking to. To let, like if I say tapuka, especially you'd say tapuka. You'd say
tapuka.
Especially. Yes, but I'll say tapuka, especially you.
Nyuchten? Nyuchten?
But
that would be you talk, right?
Tapuka.
We were just saying that yesterday with Papa George. we had a class and we were repeating when he was telling us how to say it.
Yusu is telling him. Yuchten. Yuchten.
Especially Apshu.
No,
that's
asking. Yusna.
Yusna.
Tell me. Yusna. So you, but it's not you say it, it's you tell me.
Yusna, you tell me. Yeah.
Nyusna, or is it Nyusna or Yusna?
Yusna.
That's interchangeable.
Oh, yeah, I have a question. What's the difference between the U and the U?
It's just a variation.
What's that?
Okay. The original was started with an N, but now a lot of people drop it.
I've never heard the new.
Is it an NG or an N?
I'll say you talk.
Right, that's how I always heard it. I've never heard it before.
Well, we're going to have both variations. So, Nusna. questions do you tell me? Usna. Or Usna.
Tell me, yeah, Usna.
Usna. It's one of those words where you say it too many times, it starts to sound funny.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, how do you say, all of you repeat after me, or repeat it, or?
Tamachi. It's all of you. Tamachi.
Tamachi.
Yuchji.
Yuchji. You all talk?
Tmachji Yuchji.
Tmachji Yuchji.
Repeat or talk. Okay. And what's the difference between Eshji and Tmachji? Eshji is you guys and Tmachji is all of you guys?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you...
You all.
Plural.
Yeah.
Is FG.
The be you
all of you mm-hmm. is Tamach G. Okay. You is just Eshbet.
Mm-hmm.
You did good. Zechtstan. And then you all did good. Azichtstat.
You all did. Azichtuchi.
Yeah. All of you did it good.
Azichtstachi.
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 Yeah.
All of you made it good.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the literal. Okay. Yes. Ah. Kana. No. What is this? Chakik una. This is a blank. Una blank. Where is the blank? Nama blank. Okay. Let's see here. And then in the directions, images of all objects in the skill set are needed, or as another option, miniature models or stuffed animals of the skill set vocabulary. Early lessons will require only images of single objects. Later lessons in this skill set will require images of combinations of vocabulary, such as a man and woman together. And that actually is something that we're going to need to discuss where we start combining the man and woman, this and that, because when we were out at the camp, it didn't quite seem to flow right. Because, you know, when you're saying, like, Nukashpian Guk Ahnakshu, the man and the woman, it just seems in Aleutic that that's a more difficult grammar than should be right after these single words. But we'll discuss that when we get to it. So then we have the first lesson. The first lesson, I said, will introduce 8 of the 16 new vocabulary words. The Litanoista will hang up the chosen vocabulary words. The Litanoista will point to a noun and say it. They will then urge the class to say it using Aleutic commands. Litanoista will then do the activity with individuals, saying the word, but having the student repeat and identify the correct picture. Other students should actively listen so that when they are called on, they will be able to identify the vocabulary. And then I put kind of in italics, kind of just instructions for the teacher. Like if a student gets it wrong, you know, try to work around until you can work your way back to it and help them get it right. And then also using gestures, facial expressions, and demonstration, that's another good way to give them hints without just telling them the answer. Like, we were playing this game out at the camp kind of along with this, the Nukashpiak Ahnak Takukak. It's kind of like rock, paper, scissors.
Mm-hmm.
And so they love the game, so they'd always do the Ahnak and the Nukashpiak, or the Takukak, you know, and then the Nukashpiak. And so if they forgot one of those words, I would kind of go like that or go like that, and they'd instantly remember. So then they could take credit for getting it right, even though they had to have help, as opposed to just telling them the answer.